So we're excited about the work that these students have done, and I'm excited to be able to introduce them to you. They're a part of ACU's, honor students at ACU, part of ACU's Justice and Urban Studies team, which focuses on connecting student learning to the problem of urban poverty in South Dallas in partnership with City Square. It does so over the course of multiple semesters and multiple years, in which they engage and are engaged by real issues. They study them, they reflect upon them, then they act and measure impact. And so this is Jenny Dennis. You're all like third year students now. You're all grown up, third year students. And Jenny Dennis from Garland, Texas. And Joshua Day from Salina, not Melissa, that's your Salina, Texas. Kirk Farrell from Richardson and David Wall from Bryan. They've done amazing work as part of ACU Just, and they're going to share with you today about the issue of food insecurity, food deserts, and hunger in South Dallas. So would you help me welcome them?
Okay, so like you said, welcome. This is Hunger at Our Doorstep. Our names again, I'm Jenny, this is David, Kirk, and Josh. We are four of nine students who lived in Dallas our sophomore year as a part of the Justice and Urban Studies team. So just a little bit more, the JUST program really just takes interdisciplinary undergraduate students and puts them in a real world situation to where we can learn and just do projects with our different fields of study in a real world situation. JUST is a partnership between ACU and City Square, which is a nonprofit organization in Dallas that seeks to fight the root causes of poverty.
So like she said, we are a small group. We are part of a small group. Some others are scattered around here who spent our entire sophomore year in Dallas. And that was in order to more closely combat the issues that we had learned so much about. And so meanwhile, we were still taking a full course load, some of which was taught by Dr. Shilkut over here. But everything that we were still learning was kind of framed and targeted to be applied to the social justice issues that we've been learning about and applied in a way that that calls us to take action to do that. And because early on we were taught to interpret everything kind of for the sake of justice. So no matter what subject you're learning, no matter what schoolwork you're approaching, you can always kind of interpret that in a way to kind of serve the world and serve God's kingdom. And so that's exactly what we were doing. So as freshmen, this group up here, we decided to narrow our focus more specifically to issues related to food and injustices related to food that we saw in Dallas. And so so our entire first 2 years, we continued to research and continued to learn more about what it is. And last year especially, we got to know a lot more about not only the problem, but learn more about the organizations doing something to help fight the issues of food in Dallas.
So over our course of the year, we brainstormed a lot of different ideas about how the group of us could really tackle this issue together. We went through a lot of different ideas like a mobile learning lab, a grocery truck, different variations of nutrition classes, but every idea we came up with we really couldn't figure out how to make it work for us. And we just really felt like it wasn't right for us in one way or another. We had learned so much over the year, and we really just wanted to figure out a way to spread that information and just share it with others.
So ultimately, we decided to do that. We decided that we wanted our work to be dedicated to sharing it with others. And so our spring semester of our sophomore year, we dedicated our time to share all the stuff that we had learned because we've been so educated from different experiences that we had had, so many people that we've encountered who kind of led us along the way. We wanted to kind of recreate that for a larger audience, and we thought the best way to do that was through the medium of film. And so we started videoing, interviewing, and capturing some footage that could kind of recreate that learning process and help to bring awareness to some of the kind of information we had learned and to bring awareness to so many people around us.
So speaking of, here are some of the things that we have learned. The first item that, or the first term that I really want to talk about is the term food insecurity. The definition of food insecurity is not having a consistent, dependable access to enough for access for active, healthy living. In 2012, 49 million Americans lived in food insecure households, which is about 14.5% of our population. It's a lot of our population. So one of the examples of this, as we saw it in Dallas, was the program Food on the Move. Myself and Kirk and David all spent our summer, all 12 weeks before we started our semester in Dallas, or our year in Dallas, working in different house or different apartment complexes with the program Food on the Move. City Square started Food on the Move and partners with AmeriCorps interns, so we were all AmeriCorps interns, and they really just take food into the areas that have high populations of kids who normally get free and reduced lunch during the school year. So where in during the school year they get access to food and can have at least two meals a day provided for them. In the summer they don't have that. These are some of my kids from my route. And so it was just a great opportunity to be able to serve the community and just see this issue that is so present in Dallas. And it really surprised us, you know, how many areas are affected by this.
So the next kind of term that we want to talk about is what's called food inequality. And so that's basically different strata of society share different levels of access to the food that they need. So you see this kind of divide between different communities in a city where some have good good access to healthy food and others do not. And it's kind of fitting that me and Jenny are the ones kind of going over this discussion because both of us are from the Dallas area. I'm from Richardson and she's from Garland, both in North Dallas. And growing up, neither of us ever had to worry about were we going to go to bed hungry. We always had that kind of safety net that, you know, no matter what, we know where our next meal's coming from, and we'd be able to kind of get our meals. Yet so close to us, these neighborhoods don't have that, and kids just like us who grew up just a few miles away maybe didn't eat at all that day. And it's crazy to think about that. But last year especially, we really got to kind of learn that for our own sake and kind of be open to that inequality. And in one of our interviews with President Michael Sorrell, who's the president of Paul Quinn College, which is a college in Dallas that does a lot of great work related to this, he kind of discusses that briefly and talks about this kind of stratification, this divide, and how Dallas is kind of a tale of two cities between North Dallas and South Dallas. I do apologize, the video is very quiet. We have it turned up all the way. You still may not be able to hear it all the way, but hopefully you'll be able to at least grasp it a little bit. But he's basically just telling you just that, that it's kind of a tale of two cities. Again, that's really quiet and I apologize, but what he's saying there is it's as if what they did in the north, they just thought they couldn't replicate that in the south. So that's really kind of one of the things that we learned a lot about last year.
And now we have an activity for y'all, and basically what we want y'all to do is Josh is going to hand out some papers and y'all are going to group up and try to create a 3-day meal schedule on a SNAP budget. And so we have with those a list of grocery items that are kind of the cheapest grocery items you can find, basically an attempt to, when you'll do this, I hope you attempt to both get a calorie intake that you can, and that you need, sorry, and have the a balanced nutrition in your life. And from personal experience, whenever I've done simulations like this, I found it's very difficult. And so if I could have y'all three and y'all four as a group, y'all four and y'all two as a group that works. And then Nicole, she come around and join this group. And then, sorry, Molly and Joanne, could y'all join this group up here? But and then y'all four, y'all two.
So far, one, you know, Yeah.
The dress up like so.
Hey guys, my mom wants to get a picture. Mom, standing here while we're in. So let no one else. So no one will monopolize you later. All right. Here we go. Ready? One, two, go. Lighting is really bad, but it'll be fine. Go.
Come on, command the wall.
Hey guys. Okay, I hope whenever you live off this amount of money, a lot of time your diet isn't as balanced or you don't get the amount of food that you need to. I specifically remember doing this for a whole week one time, living off this budget for food each day. And an interesting thing that happened to me was that I was still hungry all the time, but by the end of the week, I had gained weight because my diet was extremely high carbohydrate. It was extremely repetitive, and it was very low vegetable and protein for that matter, so I just had very low energy for most of it. Would anyone want to share some challenges that they found while they were trying to make this when you're trying to make a balanced diet or even enough food in side of this diet?
Just redundancy, just doing peanut butter.
Using
peanut butter for more than just, you know, he had it for breakfast, sometimes you had it for lunch, sometimes, you know, that kind of thing. So, because it's healthy, it's got protein in it that the kids need or that people need, but you just wanted to have a variety.
Yeah, and I don't want to come across the message of this isn't possible to do it all, but it's very difficult and it becomes extremely repetitive. And for a lot of people in very hard times, this isn't particularly a temporary thing, especially for kids. This isn't particularly a temporary thing. This is a lifestyle. And whenever you're, as a kid, when your lifestyle is peanut butter sandwich, peanut butter sandwich, peanut butter sandwich, day after day after day, you start missing things in your diet. Would anyone else like to share a challenge that they found?
We got to the register and had to go back and put something
in. Overshot.
Yeah.
So
that's
kind of interesting. We forfeited fruit. We really ended up having to choose between protein and fruit, and we chose protein. So that makes me sad.
Yeah. Whenever I did this for a week, I consumed no fruit the entire week because we were working all day, and then we were eating up this diet. So what I did was I went and bought ramen and mac and cheese and just tried to get full off that. Instead of just being hungry all the time, because when you're hungry, especially for me, you get extremely grumpy, you're not as genial to people around you, and so it just really presents this problems of what if you went to a job interview and you were like this, what if you were at work, what if you had a job and you're always in this attitude of I'm hungry, I have very low energy, it'd be very hard to move up in that workplace to give your best. Wherever you are. Does anyone else have anything? All right, well, I'm going to turn this over to...
Yeah, so as David kind of started illustrating, and as you kind of got to see there, one big kind of effect that we're going to highlight today is what's called the hunger-obesity paradox. And David kind of displayed that a little bit. But what you see in these low-income communities and these communities kind of impoverished and struggling to kind of find ways to satisfy their meal needs is overweight people who are still really hungry. And that's because they're getting that high caloric intake. They're getting the food that just makes them full. They're getting whatever they can afford to kind of just satisfy that urge that's cheap, but that is not nutritionally sound. And so you'll see people who are starving, but who are obese, and you say, like, how can that be? Because that doesn't make sense. You, like, your body kind of thinks, oh, like, that person has a lot of weight. Like, they obviously eat a lot. They can't be hungry, because our vision of hunger is kind of the starving children in the rib cages. But really, hunger exists in many forms and fashions. And so, really, that's because they're eating the wrong food, and that's the high calorie, low cost, and also really low nutrition. And so you ask, why does this paradox exist? Like, why does that happen? The three biggest things is because what's available, what's accessible, and what's affordable. If you're fortunate enough to be able to go to any grocery store that you want and to be able to get there on your own terms, sometimes in these areas, the selection isn't always the best. You can't get the nicest brands or the freshest produce or whatever, because the store owners have to be worried about their shelf life, because they're running a business. They have to kind of get money, so they can't put the stuff on the shelf that's gonna go bad because no one can come in and afford it and buy it. They're gonna put whatever they know that they can sell, and so that's kind of what's available to you is what you get. Next is accessible, and it's kind of like the same thing but slightly different. A lot of what we know about is about food access, and so in these communities, and we'll talk a little bit more about this tomorrow, but just to kind of get into the basics of a food desert is when you don't have grocery stores or healthy food options around. And so what's accessible to you on your street may be a McDonald's on the street corner and across from it a convenience store. You may not be able to you may not have a car, so you may not be able to drive a few miles to the nearest grocery store, so you might have to rely on public transportation or on walking. And when you do public transportation and walking, you have to think about, what can I carry in my hands? Not what can I load up in my trunk and, like, take loads in of groceries. I remember as a kid, whenever my mom came home from the grocery store, all four of us kids would go out and we would load up our hands and come in. Well, if you don't have a car with a trunk, you have to take what you can carry and maybe what your kids can carry on the bus. And so that's accessibility. But so you have that challenge, or you have a McDonald's on the street corner that you can walk to, and you can feed the kids, and they can play in the playground area, and you can come home and you're done in 30 minutes as opposed to 2 hours, and then you still have to cook something. So that's really accessibility. And the last one is affordability, and that's the most simple. Living wages are kind of a debate right now. Is it, can you actually live on low income, on the minimum wage? And so if you're only making, like, these budgets that you guys saw in your examples, if that's the budget that you have to feed yourself, and not only yourself, your kids, or your single mom, or whatever, you really realize what is affordable. And maybe those fresh fruits and vegetables aren't affordable, but mac and cheese surely is, and ramen surely is affordable. But if that's all that you're able to buy, you can see how that hunger obesity paradox really comes to light there. The next thing that we'll talk about, David kind of talked a little about how that can kind of affect yourself in your workplace. We, in all of our interviews, we saw a lot of people talking about how this affects children in the classroom. And that's something all of us can relate to. We were all students at one time. Some of us here are either still students or probably have kids who are in school. And so we know that this kind of hits home to us. But children are highly affected by this, and this video will kind of explain about that. And it'll also explain the relationship between poverty and hunger. In all of our interviews, one of the first things we ask people is, what causes hunger? Why does this exist? And nearly everyone says, hunger is caused by poverty. The cause of hunger is poverty. And so, again, I'm gonna apologize, the video is really quiet, and it's a little bit longer this time, but if we're all quiet, like, eventually you'll be able to kind of really adjust your ears to it. But basically, it just is gonna highlight how hunger and poverty are attached, and then kind of illustrate that for kids in the classroom.
So the root cause of hunger is poverty.
The root of hunger is poverty.
The cause of hunger is poverty. The inability to provide for families. There are a large portion of our metroplex, really throughout the state, but certainly throughout our metroplex, deleterious, effects on a lot of, on emotional, cognitive, social development. And that's just a fancy way of saying kids can't learn because they're distracted, because they're hungry like my son. He's like, Mom, I'm hungry, I can't do anything. They can't learn because they don't have any fuel in their body. They can't grow, their brains can't grow. Hunger is a health issue. You can't be healthy if you don't have fuel in your body, if you don't have any long range so your body can grow. You can burn that to energy. You can burn that to brain matter. So studies show that kids are smart. I challenge you to go to any inner city school district. We'll see kids have a certificate to go to them. I know it's not because their parents didn't raise them right or they did this or that. It's because they don't have the raw ingredients to convert so quickly their own.
Growing up, you know, as a child, worrying about hunger really makes it hard to grow and develop and flourish. You have the education you need to focus on becoming the person that you have. You know, every child has the potential to be. If you're worried about hunger and you're stressed about hunger, as a child, that's something that is your life and your growth.
So again, that video kind of just lays out some serious impacts of hunger. The last thing that Kevin kind of says, I don't know if you're able to hear it, but she's saying, so these children who are severely disadvantaged by the time they're 6, 7, and 8 years old, who are the future of our country, how do we expect to build our country up off of these people who are only able to work at so much of their potential because they're only getting so much nutrition? So that's really a big impact that we kind of see that is very real and it's not really hypothetical, but that you can clearly see day in and day out.
So that's really all that we have for today. Really tomorrow, we hope that y'all all can come back. We'll be in the same room at the same time, 4 o'clock. And tomorrow we'll review what we went over today. We'll show some of the same videos, just kind of review the information. And then we'll go into the causes and effects of hunger and just really delve deeper into that and what that looks like. And then we'll ask the question, what do we do as a group, as a school, as a city, a country, you know, anything like that. And that's really what we'll be covering tomorrow. So that's really what we have for today, but we are very welcoming of questions if you have any, and so we just want to take this next 5-ish minutes if anybody has any questions for us.
Did you guys do any research on, with interventions, what's possible? Like, for example, the nutrition issue, if you're a child, 6, 7, 8, poor nutrition, is there opportunity for improvement and kind of repairing some of the damage that was already done with interventions? Or, you know, sometimes like by literacy, by the time you're in third grade, if you haven't learned to read, you don't really love it, impacts forever. And so did you have any looking into that at all to see long-term effects?
I guess long-term effects-wise, it's just not able to reach your full performance. But as far as interventions goes, a lot of school programs are really working on these meal programs that are more balanced and get more meals to the kids than they would normally. And so for a lot of these communities where the parents can't particularly afford to give their kids meals, these schools provide meals to the kids. There's something called Breakfast in the Classroom that Dallas ISD is doing right now. It's a really cool program. I believe some other school districts are doing it as well. And what it is, instead of expecting kids to show up early to get their lunches, because a lot of these kids take buses, and not every bus is going to get there 10, 20 minutes early so they can get breakfast, they take the breakfast to each classroom, and every kid gets a free breakfast. I know in Boston, they switched over to where instead of having like free, reduced, and then paying kids, they just decided, hey, what we're going to do is every kid gets a free meal. And that kind of helps with some of like the ostracization of kids that have to say, oh yeah, I'm on free lunch kind of thing. It separates it. And so schools really have the opportunity to step in, and I think it's not particular, it's one of the biggest issues is how you're set back at that point, and how you're not learning what you need to learn. And Food on the Move, the program we're with, bridges that gap in the summer. Summer before last, I don't know the statistics for this summer, they serve almost 1 million meals in the Dallas area to kids as far as Irving, in the Vickery Meadows area, and all over Dallas. And that really just helps those kids to stay active and engaged and healthy over the summer, so that when they come back to school, they haven't had this whole summer of not getting that nutrition. If that answers your question.
How does this change the four of you?
I mean, first and foremost, just like awareness, like of yourself. It's really easy to kind of like, oh wow, like this is a real problem, and then kind of like pretend to ignore it, so to speak. Like, that might be bad to say, but at the end of the day, like, I can still go to a restaurant and like buy a meal if I want. I can go to the Bean and get a meal, and it's really hard to kind of like be so close to that, to get to know so many people who are impoverished or even homeless who don't have that meal, and then on the side of it, like, know that, oh, I just went to the grocery store and bought a week's worth of groceries. So really it's just kind of like that internal like wrestling with it, how do you do it? And so it's just kind of like changed my mindset. I'm a lot more giving now. I look at people begging on the side of the street for food way differently, because my experience, I've been able to kind of see them for like who they are, and so like that really kind of changes it. And then also just totally like rocked my like ignorance, or my, you know, whatever, you know, I was, you know, 18 years old, like college kid, thought I was doing a good job in the world, but like realized, you know, I could really pull a little bit more weight. So it just kind of, I'm not gonna say like I totally revolutionized the way I live, and now I, you know, donate everything I have, but it has like changed the way I think, for sure.
Yeah, personally, I think it's changed the most in like my perspective and my awareness. I think a big thing, one thing that really like struck me was one day in the summer working with Food on the Move. My route was just down, if you're familiar with the Dallas area, there's North Park Mall, and it's on Park Lane. And my route was maybe 3 blocks down. Once you cross 75, I drove maybe half a mile, and that's where my first stop was. And most of my stops were in that area. But also, one of the stops, I switched a route one day, and one of the stops was just down the street from my church that I had gone to my entire life. And I recognized some of the kids from our summer program we had at church, and it just really showed me the extent of the issue, because there's so many areas that you can look at from where everyone is, and the populated areas, and they look like they're great, like Highland Park, and you know, just all of those different areas. And Dallas is so unique in that way, that there are so many areas that are flourishing, but then one street over is where there's just such great like just poverty, and people in need. And so it just really changed my outlook of the area of Dallas and where I grew up and where I live, and really anywhere. Even Abilene, we definitely have the same issues here. So coming back and just kind of looking through it that way.
For me, it just helped me step outside of myself and my own perspective, my own, I guess, what I saw as life, and see it from another person's perspective. And I may not completely dedicate my life to fighting poverty or food security for that matter, but I'm always going to have a portion of my life that's dedicated to helping these issues. And for me, that's what I would really encourage anyone to do, is to just kind of have some portion of life that's dedicated to trying to help the less fortunate wherever they may be. And that's kind of, that's what I got out of it.
Okay. One
last
question.
If you forget time.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Some of you grew up in the Dallas area. I'm just curious, you grew up in faith communities. How did this change your perception of faith communities, and what message would you want to share with leaders of churches addressing this?
First of all, if you need to go, you totally can go.
Well, I personally am a youth ministry major, so hopefully I will one day be one of those church leaders, and so it's very kind of right in my face to kind of answer that question. Definitely has changed the way that I look at like how ministry is done or how missions can be done. I went to a church in Dallas my whole life, that surrounding communities around there, there's a lot of work to be done. And in Dallas especially, like, there's a lot of work to be done, and I know that. And so it's definitely changed my perspective, first and foremost, to know that you don't have to take a mission trip to a third world country to feed people. You can drive 2 miles to feed people. So that's that. And then, I mean, I really think, like, maybe like a message like church leaders should try to like spread to their congregations is like that message of, don't assume, you know, like what person's struggling with. Or for teachers, like if you're in a classroom, like I know, I think teachers have the hardest job in the world. To go into a classroom and teach 30 people who have 30 different things going on each and every day, and to see that kid who kind of zones out in class and think, oh, he just has bad behavioral issues. Well, maybe he doesn't have bad behavioral issues. Maybe he just didn't eat any meals the night before and anything that day, and he's just exhausted. So I think that can be applied to our churches. Like, don't look at that guy on the side of the road as just someone who threw his life away, because I've met so many people who that's not the case. Yes, it is, but I mean, everyone in this room can know that they've made plenty of mistakes, and we're just lucky enough to have not had that been like the last thing that happened to us. And so it's just kind of perception and looking at the world through the ways that I think Christ calls us to look at the world. You know?
And really, if you, I feel like the people that we met and really got to know, which definitely isn't, you know, a huge number compared to how many there are. But I could just tell that they usually had very strong, you know, opinions and feelings about faith. So they were either very religious or very not. And that usually had something to do with the churches that they had interacted with. And so, you know, the ones that are able to go to a church that is serving them and can see that through a faith community, they have great things, and their, you know, their prayer life is amazing, and they're the ones that want to come and pray for us while we're out there trying to serve them. You know, they really want to come and serve us, which is amazing. But the ones that have had bad experiences with that, they don't want to hear about it at all, and that's just really heartbreaking to know that. You know, how you're treated in a church building is really, if that's your only experience with it, that is your outlook on faith. So I think just for churches to be aware of that, and really just passionate about that issue.
Yeah. Thank you all so much for your time. We think you're going to